We should institute a countdown, everybody. You know, 5, 4. Okay, kidding. Welcome, everyone, to the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, May 18th, 2022. We will begin with roll call this evening. Mr. Standish.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. All 7 council members are present. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce our upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The May 19th Stormwater Utility Commission meeting and the May 24th Board of Adjustment meeting are both canceled. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for June 1st at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We have Council reports this evening, and Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize Bansri Modi, a kindergartner student at Basis Oro Valley. Councilmember Jones-Ivy. It's the blessings and cursings of technology.
All right, I've got a voice now. This is not only an honor, but it's a real joy. Can you all see our little angel up here? I have the honor to introduce Bansri Modi. She's a kindergartner at Basis Oro Valley. For being so young, she's already started to leave a lasting impression on the Basis community. She is a wonderful student, a kind friend, and is always helpful by being someone both staff and students can count on. Bansri recently won first prize in the Southern Arizona Research Science and Engineering Foundation's Science Fair. Her project was My Little Sprout House. She built a sponge house to help answer her question, how sprouts can come from seeds? She learned about the germination process and recorded her results. We can see that Bansri is curious and focused, and we are so proud to recognize her as our spotlight on youth and are excited to see what her future holds. Congratulations, little lady.
Thank you, Bansri. And thank you, Modi family. You know, this is the season of graduations. We have a number of high schools in our community, CDO, Ironwood Ridge High School, Push Ridge, Immaculate Heart, Basis. Some of these graduation ceremonies have already begun or ongoing, and we want to express our gratitude for all of our seniors, and we congratulate them and their next phase in life. We also want to recognize the teachers, counselors, administrators, parents who have supported these young people, and we wish you the very best. I'd also tonight like to recognize both the CDO and Ironwood Ridge athletic programs. The schools have had some very successful seasons. I'll start with CDO. The baseball team, coached by Jason Heisey, won the 4A state championship 7-6 against South Point. The softball team, coached by Kelly Fowler and Paul Avila, are the state 4A runner-up. The final score against South Point was 10-7. Finally, there are some individual students on the track and field team, coached by Michelle Gerard and Jessica Wheatley, who I'd like to recognize. Rowan Barney won second in state for the boys' pole vault event and the 110 hurdles. Shelby Horrocks placed third in girls' pole vault event. And Jace Schwab, Ethan Fritzinger, Sean Jacobson, and Alex Luckett came in second in the boys' 4x800 relay. So now we'll move on to Ironwood Ridge. The boys' tennis team finished fourth at state, and there's some individual track and field athletes that I'd like to recognize for their accomplishments. Logan Merrick was the state champion in the boys' 1600 meter and 3200 meter and has a track scholarship at the University of Arizona. Beatrice Holmbrink placed third in the girls' 1600 meter and has a track scholarship at the University of Arizona. Matt Puchner was the state champion in the boys' 800 meter and has a track scholarship at the University of Oregon. Finally, Mason Tingle, Nathan Richardson, Logan Merrick, and Matt Puchner were state champions in the boys' 4x800 relay. So we congratulate the coaches and the student athletes for their success. Why don't you join me and applaud for these young people? Other council reports this evening? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you for this great turnout tonight. I'd like to share with the public that I've requested council reports on the progress of Conquistador irrigation and the tennis court resurfacing. Why do I ask that? Because one thing I've learned in this job, that most of the money that we manage is your money. There are no gifts from Phoenix. There are no people that are giving us money. Rather, we collect money from you, and we spend it on you. And I think one of the highest priorities of council is to make sure that we spend our money wisely. So I'm pleased to announce that the Conquistador irrigation did start, but we should get a schedule, and we should be watching that each hole finishes as scheduled, and for the tennis courts, that each milestone is completed as scheduled, because these are revenue-generating facilities for the town, so the quicker we finish the construction, the quicker we can return them to generating revenue. Thank you.
I'd like to advise council and Councilmember Bowen, and we'll make it clear going forward that announcements are simply for community events and the like, and not for events that could be considered agenda items or public items. There's been no notice.
Now, Ms. Jacobs will present her report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council, members of the community. First of all, I wanted to let those who don't know that on Monday we unveiled Oro Valley's third mural, and we have some beautiful photos to show you this evening. It's painted on three sides of the concession stand at Riverfront Park, and I don't know if you all agree, but I think we all think it's gorgeous. The response on social media to this new mural has been amazing. People love it, and they can't wait to see it in person. The artist, Eli Farias, said this mural was inspired, not surprisingly, by the beautiful starry nights in Oro Valley and, of course, the beautiful desert colors. The project was a partnership between the town of Oro Valley and SACA, which is the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance. Also, this week is Public Works Week, and I want to take a moment to recognize our Public Works Director, Paul Kiesler, and his amazing team of professionals who are the reason that this community drives on quality roads, has well-maintained infrastructure, walks into clean and well-kept public buildings, and can enjoy safe streets and roads every day. While Paul and his team work with professionals from other departments, of course, to get their jobs done, this is their week, and I want to thank them for their dedication and commitment to the Oro Valley community. And I also want to include in the leadership recognition our own assistant town manager, Chris Cornelison, who oversees Public Works as one of his departments. He spent so much time with Paul and his team that he knows just enough about engineering to qualify tonight as an honorary member of the Public Works team. So thank you, Chris, Paul, to your entire teams. Thank you very much, and I hope you'll pass along our regards. Just thank you. And Paul is just sheepish enough that next year we're going to do the same, make him do the same proclamation here that I made Mike do for his town clerk's week recently. So we have a lot of humility, Mr. Mayor, members of council, among our staff. Just a reminder that the public is invited to weigh in on the proposed budget on June 1st when the council considers the tentative budget, and again on June 15th when the final budget will be considered. And since these are official public hearings, residents that are not able to come to the council chambers can submit requests in advance. They can also request to provide their comments on Zoom. So in order to do that, the request needs to be made a day prior to the meeting. And if you are interested, just check the town's website and specifically the agenda once it's posted, which is posted a week in advance, for more information and for the details on how you can participate in our budget process. And then finally, I want to echo the congratulations that the mayor mentioned for the graduates this month from all of our high schools, and also those residents who are graduating from college, whether here locally or somewhere else, with a special shout out to all the kids of employees of the town of Oro Valley. I know we're missing a few folks this evening because they have kids graduating this evening. So we're proud of you. We look forward to all you will accomplish in the future. And if any one of these young people wants to explore a career in local government, we have lots of amazing professionals to talk you into and tell you more about this rewarding career. And that's all I have this evening, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. We appreciate that report. I would like to make a change to the agenda. Recommend to the council that we move of the regular agenda, item 6, move that ahead to number 1 of the regular agenda. Second. So item 6.
Second?
Any objections? Okay, so we'll make that change to the agenda. Again, welcome this evening. We appreciate each of you joining us this evening. If you would like to participate in tonight's program, we invite you to fill out a blue card. I do have some blue cards for a call to audience, and that will be the next item on the agenda. So pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. First individual invited to speak is Chris Collins. And if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Thank you.
My name is Chris Collins, and I'm a resident and a father of 3 kids who are growing up in Oro Valley. We moved here 10 years ago, and we love it. I'm also a member of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, and I'm here tonight to express my support for the proposed rezoning located on Calle Concordia. It's been a part of our goal and mission as a church to be able to make an impact in the community. And this project, as currently proposed, is a continuation of the effort that started 40 years ago when a group of people got together and they started a church that they hoped would make an impact in the Oral Valley area. We believe every building and facility that we have is a sanctuary, providing opportunities for worship in different forms. Every part of our campus has an intended use to share the love of Christ. We can't separate facility programming from our biblical mission to love God and serve others, because our goal is for everyone participating in an activity, a meeting, or a service at one of our existing or proposed facilities to hear a gospel message through our interactions, our words, or both. Every inch of our campus spaces, buildings, and facilities that God has blessed us with are used intentionally for religious purposes. The overall vision of OVCN is seen in all aspects of our church, reaching those who need the life-changing hope of Jesus Christ and empowering followers to impact the world. The vision of this proposed project has a few key goals. First, we believe that it creates a catalyst for expanding the church's reach into our community by providing the Oral Valley area a much-needed facility for sports and recreation. Second, it strengthens the community's foundation in faith by using sports and recreation programs to have intentional conversations about life. And third, it will provide an inclusive, fun, and safe space for youth in the community to participate in sports, recreation, and faith-based programs, regardless of skill level, abilities, or economic status. This is a time in our culture and in our community where we should be providing more opportunity for positive sport and play, not less. OVCN is focused on reaching out to the community, including those not currently part of our church family. And this project will provide youth and families in our community an opportunity to participate in a positive, faith and character-building sports experience. OVCN has been an active partner in our community, working with the Town of Oral Valley, Amphi Schools, the Chamber of Commerce, Pima County Emergency Response, and various branches of law enforcement to open our facilities and to be a good neighbor in our great town. And in the very near future, this council will receive a fully vetted and scrutinized and then re-vetted and scrutinized proposal that will meet every requirement that the zoning proposal asks for. And so we would encourage the town council and the mayor to vote yes on that proposed rezoning when you get it, as we continue working together to make a difference in our community. Thank you.
Karen Steinbraun.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, council members, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Karen Steinbraun. I'm a town resident, and I own two properties in proximity to the Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene. I'm opposed to the planned area development requested by the Oral Valley Church of the Nazarene, which consists of a mega sports complex, some classrooms, and an outdoor amphitheater. This is a residential neighborhood bordering the church on three sides. There are two-lane roads, horse properties, that are unique to the area. The sports complex, the amphitheater, will increase traffic, congestion, increase noise levels, lighting issues, safety hazards, and environmental issues. Last night, CDO held their graduation, and I enjoyed hearing pomp and circumstance from my patio and seeing the fireworks. But this is a once-a-year event we can all celebrate. Then we also enjoy listening to the band as they're at CDO during football season, but that's about a half dozen evenings during that football season. But if the mega sports center is allowed and this outdoor amphitheater, I'll have noise, I'll have light pollution, could be 24/7, 365 days a year. Not only will I lose some enjoyment of my property, but probably the value of my property will be diminished. The town of Oral Valley is doing an outstanding job expanding Naranja Park to provide sports opportunities and activities for our community. Four new fields are being dedicated, and more refinements are coming. Is it totally necessary to have another mega sports complex developed by the church in this residential neighborhood? Or is this more of a revenue stream? If so, it should be located in a commercial area, closer to Oracle Road, not next to homeowners and residential areas. What services will the town of Oro Valley be required to provide to support this mega sports complex? And as a taxpayer, I'd want to know what revenue the town of Oro Valley is expected to receive from this mega sports center. I have nothing against religion. I'm a churchgoer, and I believe in outreach. I go to a different church in the area. But I also think we should have a separation of church and government. Thank you.
Ed Clary.
Hello, my name is, Hello, my name is Ed Clary, and I, my wife, and sons have been residents of Oro Valley for nearly 10 years. This evening, I'd like to discuss with you what the previous two speakers have, the proposed rezoning of the property of Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene, which, to be clear, I do not support. That proposal, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, is admirable on the surface, but it's simply not the right area for such a facility. I'm going to repeat something I've actually said to many of you, either in person or via Zoom, in the last two annual meetings involving the town facility at 680 West Kaya Concordia, which is only three doors down from OVCN and this proposal. Previously, I said to you, when the time comes for you to consider the rezone less than a quarter of a mile away, please remember that the impact of 680, the current OVCN campus, CDO High School, Cray Park, and the Aquatic Center is greater than the sum of their individual parts on the residential neighborhood. Today, the sum of those parts sits at a level where the character of the surrounding neighborhood is endangered. All five of the facilities I mentioned are contiguous with each other, with the exception of three private residences. The proposal is simply incompatible with the area, despite the good intentions. I'm sure most of you live in residential areas. Would you honestly want this project in your backyard? And if your answer is yes, I would like to speak with you about it at a later date and time. That's why we have zoning. It simply doesn't fit. Neighborhood resistance is monolithic. 14 out of 14 property owners that adjoin OVCN have already protested in writing to the town. There is no demonstrable benefit of this plan for any neighbor, not one. In fact, it hurts us all for reasons that include but are not limited to significant drops in property value, light and noise pollution, traffic and drainage issues, plus the loss of residential views of Push Ridge. CDO High School predated the town of Oro Valley and has been the boundary between development and R144 residential property for more than half a century, and it should remain that boundary without a compelling reason in the public interest to do so, and that is the key. OVCN certainly has a private interest, but ladies and gentlemen, that's not your concern when the public interest is being hurt. You were elected to serve the public interest. I'm sorry, but the sports facilities outlined, essentially five basketball courts and a football field available to outsiders for a fee, controlled by a private organization, does not create a compelling public interest. If approved, this new, enormous, and additional facility, when combined with what I listed above, will finally go well, well beyond the sum of the individual parts. It will fundamentally transform the neighborhood, literally at the expense of those who live there, for the benefit of those who almost exclusively do not. Where is the compelling public interest when the surrounding public is telling you with a bullhorn that we are not interested? In closing, I generally only wish OVCN the best. They are my neighbors. I also am a churchgoer. I just don't go to OVCN. They brought the land in question knowing the current rules and why they have every right to request a change. If they could not abide by those rules, they shouldn't have bought the property. There is no compelling public interest that indicates that they should not be required to live by the same rules that all the rest of us that live in the neighborhood do. I respectfully ask that this comes to your attention for a vote, that you vote against the proposal. Thank you for your time and attention.
Darren Devert. David, excuse me.
I'm a resident of Oro Valley. My name is David Divert. I live on Calle Concordia, across from the Oro Valley Church of Nazarene. And as Chris, that was up here, said, they've had an impact. Yeah, they had a negative impact on our neighborhood. We've been there 20-some years. We've seen two expansions of the church. Neither one has been very good to us because it has increased the noise and the traffic. Whenever they do a traffic study, they seem to forget there is noise that comes with the traffic. So by counting cars, that really doesn't account for what's really going on in the neighborhood. The other thing that seems to get overlooked is they've actually created a heat island in our neighborhood by their buildings, parking lots. When they took over this property, they want rezoned. They took out a whole bunch of vegetation, and they don't even try to enforce the buffer zone that they are supposedly have to have there. The lighting, I can see the headlights come in our front bedroom windows. They have a light out there that's over 1,000 feet away from me that shines into our window in the front bedrooms. And adding more lighting, their proposal for this field says, well, the lights won't affect the neighbors. There's no way you can have 70-foot lights and not affect the neighbors. My suggestion is don't rezone it. If they want to use it for something, they should use it to teach kids how to raise crops because it's zoned for agriculture. And I'm very much opposed to any further expansion and more of a heat island effect. Thank you.
Doug Dalby.
Good evening. My name is Doug Dalby. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I live at 9380 North Calle Buena Vista. And I also am opposed to the requested rezoning of the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. And I guess my primary opposition is location, location, location. I've looked at Oro Valley's website more in the past couple months than I have in a lot of years. I've been there 42 years. But when you look at the general plan, and you look at all of the rezoning, the zoning laws, whether it be R-144, whether it be for PAD, the general plan, Linda Vista Citrus Tract is considered a historically significant piece of property. And it seems to me you need the zoning. You need the zoning laws. I think there's been just a tremendous amount of effort over the years to refine that and have the zoning laws. And there is a provision to make those changes if needed. My neighbor had built a house. His house was 2 foot higher than the R-144 zoning would allow. So he went through the rezoning request. He got his roof pushed up 2 feet, no problem. What Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene is trying to do is convert an R-144 to a commercial piece of property. They've rescinded on the field house, the football stadium, but they still want to build a 75,000 square foot building, and they made it clear that this is a for-profit venture. And I think any reasonable and prudent person that lives in the neighborhood, or actually anywhere, would see that going from an R-144 to a commercial piece of property just does not make sense. We've had some testimonials from different people. The church is Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene does some wonderful things, and I'm sure they do. But what I find kind of interesting is that the people that go to the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene don't live in the neighborhood, so they don't have to put up with that. And since this is a commercial venture with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and potentially Upward Sports, it seems to me like they don't really have to fund this. This is no different than a Home Depot or a Walmart going in. It's the customers, the kids, that are going to fund this. So it looks to me like the people that belong to Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene don't really have any skin in the game. There's 109 acres for sale on Tangerine and Oracle, and it seems like just a perfect piece of property. It's on Oracle, Tangerine. You could build a football stadium. You could build a sports activity center and not really interfere with the R-144, the neighborhood, and create the types of problems that the various people have brought up, the lighting, the traffic, the flooding. So I am very much opposed to Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene getting a rezoning request to build a sports complex. Thank you.
I have no more call to audience blue cards. I'll close call to audience, and we'll go to the presentations portion of our agenda this evening. Mr. Standish, item one of presentations.
Presentation by the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance of the winners of the Oro Valley Photography Contest.
Kate Marquez, with the Executive Director of the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, will present this item this evening.
I'd first like to invite any of the winners that are here this evening up to the stage here, in the presentation area.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Again, my name is Kate with the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance. I'm really honored to be here tonight to share with you the winners this year of the 2022 Oro Valley Photography Competition.
Yeah, so Paul, you'll want to come up. Yeah.
We have multiple winners in multiple categories. I'm very excited that so many were able to be here this evening. We'll give them a chance to. Hello. All right. I'll get started while everybody is finding their designated photos, or maybe multiple photos in here. But this year, the photography competition had over 400 images submitted. On the success of the project the prior year in our kind of COVID bubble that we were all living in, we had an enormous response with over 500 images submitted the first year. So this year we had a category specifically that we asked everyone to submit in. So this year we featured places in nature, people, and animals and wildlife. We have a limited presentation opportunity here, so what we're going to do is we're going to feature the top winners in each category, our first being Danilo Feria. His first place winner is Land of Inflatables at Honeybee Canyon. Our second place in the places in nature, the Wild Wild West by Diane Slotin, and John Amato, third place. I cannot pronounce the specific one. But a beautiful winner. We had several honorable mentions in this category as well. Again, you can see all of these photos online. We have a dedicated website just for these photos and every single submission, www.oravalleyphotos.com. We also had Danilo Feria win in another category under this, Hope, as an honorable mention, James Capo for Sonora Night, Melanie Franz for Saguaro Macro, Sarah Kirker for Contrast, and Steve Prohl for Rainbow Over Table Mountain. So all beautiful categories. Our next featured category was people, so at least 25% of this photo had to include an individual. So our first place winner is Paul Richardson with Capturing a Masterpiece. Paul Livingston, second place for Great Granddaddy. Rhonda Royce, third place for A Girl and Her Horse. And we have also Diane Slotin, who won in Walk a Mile in My Shoes, and Janice Witt for Phoenix Rising. By far, our most popular category was animals and wildlife. Our first place winner goes to Melissa Harnish for Purple Feather Splendor, Diane Slotin again for It's in His Nature, and John Amato for Craigos Gaster Ants. I will not attempt to do the name of this one as well. We also have honorable mentions, Jan Mayer, Colorado River Toad. We also have Kevin Kaur with Get a Grip on It, Melanie Franz with Olise 2, Bill Semrad, Busy Bee in Our Front Yard, and Charlie Alkaloy, Have at Thee. So that is our presentation. Thank you, everyone, for contributing. These photos will be used in marketing and promotions and outreach from Visit Tucson as well as Oro Valley, and of course in all of the outreach for the Southern Arizona Arts and Culture Alliance. So Kate, thank you for supporting this.
Kate, can we get a photo of everyone together?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting. This is also Police Week, and I just want to thank all those crazy people back there, even the one who arrested me.
Okay, Councilmember Green would like.
Earlier in our program tonight, we showed some of the murals that are going up around town. And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Miss Kate Marquez is one of the major reasons we have that. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank her for what she does for the arts in Oro Valley and Tucson. So thank you, Kate.
So much. Thank you. Thank you for all being here. Thank you, everyone.
Yep, thank you, Kate. And we appreciate all the photographers that were with us this evening and their beautiful photography that you've shared with us. Thank you so much. You've certainly captured some of the wonderful things about Oro Valley. We'll go to item two of presentations. Mr. Standish.
Proclamation, Kids to Parks Day.
Thank you. I'll read the proclamation. Whereas May 21st, 2022 is the 12th Kids to Parks Day organized and launched by the National Park Trust, held annually on the third Saturday of May, and Kids to Parks Day empowers kids and encourages families to get outdoors and visit local parks, public lands, and waters. And we should encourage children to lead a more active lifestyle to combat the issues of childhood obesity, diabetes, and hypertension. And whereas Kids to Parks Day will broaden children's appreciation for nature and outdoors. And whereas Kids to Parks Day will recognize the importance of recreating responsibly while enjoying the benefits of the outdoors. Now, therefore, I, Joseph C. Winfield, Mayor of Oro Valley, do hereby proclaim May 21st, 2022, as Kids to Parks Day, and urge residents of Oro Valley to make time on this day to take the children in their lives to a neighborhood, state, or national park. And I would like to present this proclamation to our Parks and Recreation Director, Ms. Christy Diaz-Trahan.
Experiences that she's had with her family. I think we could all relate to that. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you, Mayor Council. As a reminder, Saturday is the official Kids to Parks Day. If you go onto our Facebook page, we have some staff that came up with a Kids to Park wrap. You can go on and watch it, and prizes. We have bingo prizes to kind of a scavenger hunt, and then take your picture, send it in, and you'll win a great prize. So, and kids are not just the little ones. We are kids at heart. So I encourage everyone to get to a park this weekend. Thank you.
Thank you, Christy. So we're having some technical difficulties. Are we going to get the monitors functioning, or do we just press on? Should I take a break?
Mr. Mayor, we did have a vendor here this morning who was apparently unable to find the problem.
We'll press on.
Okay, that would be my recommendation.
All right. We'll go to item three of presentations, Mr. Standish.
presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 21-22 financial update through March 2022.
So Mr. Gephardt will present this item, Chief Financial Officer for the Town of Oro Valley.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I am not Ms. Gomez, so just bear with me. I'm going to do my best to fill in with presenting your report for you this evening. I know those are kind of large shoes. You're kind of probably used to her presenting this, but she is away, and so I'll go ahead and get started this evening. So tonight we'll be covering the funds that you're used to seeing for our monthly financial report. Those funds include the general fund, the highway fund, and our community center fund. So jumping right in into the next slide. Let's see if my clicker, okay. So things continue to look very positive three quarters of the way through the fiscal year. All year-end estimates have been kept the same as those reported last month. For the general fund revenues, we see that sales tax collections are at $19.7 million, or 93% of budget. We expect them to end the fiscal year 23% over budget, which is about $4.9 million. All categories continue to perform well, including restaurant and bar, bed taxes, retail, etc. Looking at state shared revenues, we've received about $10.8 million through March, and that's 79% of our budget. We're expecting to end the year at about $540,000, or just under 4% over budget. As has been previously mentioned, our new Smart and Safe funds that we received this year are helping that line or that category, as that revenue source was unbudgeted this fiscal year. Recreation revenues are trending higher than expected, which is helping charges for services outperform budget. That category is almost $1.9 million, or 79% of budget through March. They are expected to end the year at $127,000, or 5.3% over budget. In licenses and permits, SFR permits have picked up a little as the year has progressed. However, most of what you're seeing in this category is on the commercial side. Collections are at $1.93 million, or 4% over budget through March, and we expect to end the year at $2.2 million, which is about $350,000, or 19% over budget. Grant revenues consist primarily of ARPA dollars that we expect to recognize this fiscal year. All other includes some intergovernmental revenues, interest income, and other miscellaneous income for this category. In total, these are expected to come in on budget at year end. In total, we have actuals of about $39.3 million in the general fund revenues, which is about 83.5% of budget. And we are expected to come in at $53.1 million, which is about $6 million, or 13% over budget. Again, strong sales tax collections from inflation is helping the town outperform budget. The next slide, moving on to expenditures for the general fund, our personnel actuals are at $20.2 million through March. We're about 66% of budget. We are expecting some savings by fiscal year end due to turnover and vacancies. We're looking to come in at about $29.5 million, or 96% of budget. O&M in the general fund is trending pretty much on budget. We are at $17.4 million in actuals, which is about 79% of budget. The $10 million PSPRS payment from reserves was made in July and is impacting this category. We're expecting to end the year at about $22.1 million in expenditures, which is slightly over budget due to inflation. With capital, the large variance you see there for the year-end estimate is our westward look improvements, and some of that is going to be carried over into next fiscal year, and that's really driving all of the variance for capital. And then there's transfers out, where we budgeted both the principal and interest on the PSPRS pension obligation bonds this fiscal year, but only an interest payment is due, and so that's generating savings that you see there. In total, we've spent $42.4 million, which is about 69% of our budget. And we are expecting to end the year at about $58.5 million, and that's $2.7 million, or 4.5% below budget. Here's the chart for the general fund. Revenues of $39.3 million compared to $37.1 million the last fiscal year through March. On the expenditure side, we see actuals of $42.4 million compared to $28.9 million last fiscal year, due primarily to the $10 million PSPRS reserve payment. We budgeted a deficit or planned use of fund balance of $14.2 million, but we are now looking or expecting only to use about $5.4 million at the end of the fiscal year of fund balance, and that would land us at about $27 million in estimated fund balance, which is about 50% of our budgeted expenditures, and this would exceed Council's 25% policy by about $13.5 million. Moving on to the Highway Fund, I don't think there's a whole lot that has changed from February, so I'll just kind of hit the highlights here. We had mentioned that our HERF revenues are trending quite well, and you can see through March, the HERF dollars are already at about $2.9 million, which is which is a little bit over. Get to the right page here. Apologize. Okay, which is a little over budget. Again, strong. Lost my spot. Okay, here we go, which is 80% of budget. There we go. So our HERF dollars, are revenues are at $2.9 million, which is 80% of budget. We're expecting to come in at $3.9 million for those revenues, and that's really driving the overall variance in the fund. We're expecting to land at $3.9 million in total revenues for the fund as well, and that's about $265,000 or 7.3% over budget. For the expenditures in the Highway Fund in personnel, we've spent $817,000, or about 68% of budget. We expect to see just a smidge of savings at year end in this category. For O&M, we're expecting this category to come in on budget. Through March, we had spent $396,000, or 64% of budget. In capital as well, we're expecting to land on budget. We had our Lambert CIP project complete, as well as most of our pavement preservation, so that category is sitting at almost $2 million of expenditures, which is 88% of budget. In total, we've spent $3.2 million. In total, we've spent $3.2 million, or 78% of budget, and we're expecting to come in just a smidge over or under budget due to some of those slight personnel savings. Jumping to the chart for the Highway Fund, we have actual revenues of $2.9 million compared to $2.7 million last fiscal year through March. Expenditures are at $3.2 million compared to $2.4 million last fiscal year, likely due to when capital is hitting, since capital is really the big chunk of this fund. As a reminder, we did plan to use $443,000 of fund balance this fiscal year, but now expect to only dip into fund balance by about $157,000. That would bring our ending estimated fund balance for the Highway Fund to about $1.1 million. Lastly, we'll cover our Community Center Fund. Things continue to look very positive in this fund, and we are not expecting any subsidy to golf operations this fiscal year. We'll go ahead and jump into the details here. Contracted operating revenues are at $3.6 million, or 99% of budget. They're expected to come in at about $4.4 million for the year, which is about $770,000, or 21% over budget. Town operating revenues are already 16% over budget, with about $808,000 in collections. We're expecting to end the fiscal year at $985,000, which is $287,000, or 41% over budget. We bumped up our half-cent sales tax as well relative to the general fund trends that we're seeing with sales tax collections. We've collected about $2.7 million in other revenues, or 88.5% of budget. We expect to end the year with $3.6 million in that category, which is about $550,000, or 18% over budget. So that includes our half-cent sales tax, our HOA contributions, and then some smaller categories like interest income and that sort of thing. In total for the Community Center Fund, we've collected $7.1 million, or 96% of budget, and expect to end up with a little over $9 million in collections, exceeding budget by $1.6 million, or 22%. Moving on to expenditures for the fund, contracted operating expenditures are at $3.4 million through March, or 72% of budget. We're expecting to see some personnel and O&M savings. coming in under budget by about $230,000 or 4.95% for the year. Town operating expenditures, we're seeing those trends pretty much land on budget, or expecting those expecting town operating expenditures to land on budget. Through March, we had spent about $739,000 or 68% of our budget. Capital as well is trending on budget. Through March, we had spent about $93,000 or 70% of our budget. We're expecting to land on budget by year end for that category. And transfers out reflect savings from only needing to make an interest payment on our $25 million parks and rec bond issuance, where the full principal and interest payment was budgeted this fiscal year. In total for the Community Center Fund, we've spent about $4.4 million in expenditures through March, or about 56% of budget, and we expect to end the year spending about $6 million, which is $1.77 million, or 23% under budget, primarily due to the transfers out savings. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund. Revenues improved dramatically over last fiscal year, $7.1 million versus $5.5 million. Of course, that's primarily due to the COVID environment that we were in last fiscal year. Expenditures are up slightly, $4.4 million versus $4 million compared to last fiscal year. We did plan to use $400,000 of fund balance this year, but with the positive revenue collections, we're now expecting to end the year with about $3 million in surplus and an estimated ending fund balance of $5.7 million. So that concludes my presentation this evening for you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Thank you for bearing through that, and I'll be available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. We'll open it to council questions. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Dave, for your presentation. Would it be possible to bring up attachment C1 for the Community Center Fund?
Guys have that in the back. Councilmember Bowen, I apologize. I don't know that we have that attachment as part of the presentation. I don't know if we're able to bring that up or not.
It's attached to tonight's agenda.
Just for the audiences, we're having some technological problems. So our monitors on this side have gone blank. Looks like yours are blank as well.
There we go. It looks like we've got it up now. Thank you.
Regarding the sales tax revenue, pardon me, is it correct that this year we're projecting $3.4 million being collected rather than the $2.9 million budgeted?
Councilmember Bowen, Mr. Mayor, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And regarding transfers out, I note that at the end of the year we predict we're going to have about $315,000 of transfers out, but initially we predicted over $1.8 million of transfers out. Could you go over that again for us? Why are the actual transfers out so much lower than what we budgeted for?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, thank you for the question. When we created the budget last year, around March, April, trying to estimate what expenditures we were going to have this fiscal year, we kind of took a worst-case scenario. We didn't know exactly, because we hadn't issued our Parks and Rec bond issuance, our $25 million Parks and Rec bond issuance yet. That bond had not been issued. So we budgeted full principal and full interest just kind of as a worst case scenario. As we issued that bond, I believe it was in September or maybe early October of 2021, so the current fiscal year, we determined that we only needed to make that interest payment this fiscal year. So that principal payment, which really is pretty significant, was not necessary to be made this fiscal year, and so that's creating those budgetary savings.
So the unpaid principal payment, it remains in the year-end fund balance for the Community Center Fund.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. It remains in reserve in the Community Center Fund and will carry forward into next fiscal year.
Is it in any way encumbered such that it's attached to a future principal payment, or is it completely unencumbered?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, it is unencumbered and unrestricted. So each budget year stands on its own. There's not really a carryover. Those appropriations lapse at year end from year to year. And so as we look at future budget years, those amounts will need to be, any amounts that weren't paid that will need to be paid, such as a debt issuance, will need to be rebudgeted and included in future fiscal years budgets.
Now, for the Parks and Recreation loan, isn't it true that it's the general fund that actually guarantees the loan payment? Even though the loan payment comes from the Community Center Fund, it's the general fund that's the ultimate guarantor of the payments that we make.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, the general fund sales tax revenues are a primary source, a guarantor, as you want to say. Yes, that is included in the total revenue stream that could be utilized as a repayment for the Parks and Rec bond issuance. However, we feel that we have enough revenue capacity moving forward and enough history with our sales tax collections that is not going to be necessary. Our bond rating agency was able to recognize that, which is part of the reason why they kept our Sterling Town credit rating at a AA+.
No, and thank you for that, Dave. Regarding the contractors' expenditures in personnel, I had sent a communication to you earlier today that it looks like the trend for the fourth quarter actually indicates increasing expenditures on personnel. This despite the fact that for 2 months of the fourth quarter, 27 of our 45 holes of golf are going to be closed. Do we have any explanation why expenditures might go up during a time when most of our holes are closed?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's really an excellent question. That is, when we receive our estimates, our year-end estimates, we work with our contractor to provide those to us. I don't have a good answer for you this evening. That is certainly something that we could follow up on with our golf contractor and provide a response to you at some point in the future.
Okay, and in earlier today's communication, I raised a similar question about the town-operated expenditures for personnel. It appeared that through three quarters of the year, and that's where we are, we have a very good understanding of where we are in 21 and 22 right now. Three quarters of the year is in and only one quarter remains. And the trend was that we're planning to spend a lot more in the fourth quarter, and this despite the fact that the tennis courts are closed as well. So any answer from the town as to why they would project higher expenditures in the fourth quarter of 21-22?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I do have some sense of this question or a response to it. As we move towards the summer months, there is a ramp up in hiring related to our Parks and Rec offerings, and I'm sure our Parks and Rec director could attest to that. As they prepare and plan for their summer programs, we do ramp up the last quarter of the fiscal year. That certainly explains some of it. I would also add that the last month of the fiscal year, June, if you look at the timing of the payroll, we have about 2 days, July 1st and July 2nd, that would be technically included in next fiscal year, but the bulk of that last payroll really falls or would fall in the prior fiscal year, the current fiscal year that we're in. And so that would place in the month of June about three payrolls, which is going to naturally increase our personnel expenditures, not just in the Community Center Fund, but townwide. So that is kind of a combination of those two factors. And if our Parks and Rec director wants to speak more to the plans for this summer and that variance or that projection, I should say, she's certainly welcome.
Thank you. Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, Dave nailed it. We're ramping up for summer programming. We have over 130 kids each week participating in summer camp, so we have to have staffing for that. Also, our inclusive program has specialized staffing, and we expand our swimming pool hours, so we're adding more lifeguards.
So what I had noted, it went from an average of about 187K to 328K. That's, you know, kind of bordering on almost twice as much. Is it true that we have almost twice as many people working as we ramp into summer?
I'm having technical difficulties as well. So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, yes, it is. We have a week and a half of training for staff as well as the full implementation.
Thank you. And Dave, could you pull up the general fund schedule? I believe that's E1. The sales tax collections, pardon me, the general fund fund schedule. And that's attachment A, thank you.
Yeah.
A question on licenses and permits in the revenue side. I had noticed that we had a very good year so far this year. We're getting about $600,000 a quarter, or a little more than that, $1.93 million over 9 months. And yet we only project to have $2.2 million at the end of the year. Do we expect a significant slowdown in licenses and permits over the fourth quarter?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, yeah, we actually do. Now, we may be a little bit conservative here, but as mentioned in the presentation, most of what we're seeing in that category is on the commercial side, and we just don't anticipate that we're going to see as much revenue in commercial activity through the last quarter of this fiscal year. So that's really what has driven us to land where we're at through March, about three quarters of the way through the year. We do expect those collections to slow down this last quarter of the fiscal year. They may not, but that's what our anticipation is.
So that's anticipation, not any hard data.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, correct. When we put these projections together, we do work with our CED, Community Economic Development Department, and they usually alert us as to what our expectations ought to be from a revenue standpoint and what large commercial projects we have going on. And we don't have an expectation of any large projects that would be generating significant revenues in that category through the balance of this fiscal year.
Okay, and thank you, Dave, for answering these questions. The reason I ask them is at the 75% mark, we have a lot of trend data in the year, and I truly do believe that our revenues are going to be a lot better than we predict. We haven't been updating them very rapidly, and I will make another prediction. I said from 14 to 5. I'll predict again in public. I think it's going to be a $3 million deficit at the end of the year. The revenue projections are extremely conservative, and our projections for expenditures seem very high to me when I look at them. None of them are at 75% right now. Everything is well below 75%. So I think we're going to have more of a $3 million deficit at the end of the year. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions, Council? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Gephardt. We appreciate your presentation this evening. I will go to the consent agenda. I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion passes 7-0. We'll go to the regular agenda, reminding the council and those in the audience that we agreed to move item 6 to number 1. So, Mr. Standish, item 6.
Resolution number R22-23, approving a memorandum of understanding between public safety employees in the town of Oro Valley pursuant to Chapter 4, Section 4-1-8 of the town code, public safety employee relations and processes. Such agreement to be effective starting on June 19th, 2022 and ending June 30th, 2025, and authorizing the town manager and her designees to assign retroactive pay to January 2nd, 2022.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Assistant Town Manager Chris Cornelison will introduce this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So tonight I'm pleased to present to you an agreed-upon memorandum of understanding between the Management Negotiation Committee and the Public Safety Negotiation Committee. I do want to express a lot of appreciation for the very honest and productive conversation that we've had over these past few months with the public, the PNS, or the PSNC, Town Manager Mary Jacobs, Chief Riley, and Deputy Chief Larder. You know, one of the main reasons and purposes that we get together and have these negotiations and discussions is really to learn from each other, to understand the different perspectives that everyone brings to the table, and then to work through those challenges, disagreements, and then also find common ground. And I think that we've done that. And so, you know, as part of this process, it was apparent that we do face some challenges, both current and future, in regards to a recruitment and retention perspective for our police officers, and that there are some potential ramifications if we are unable to fill our openings. And in fact, as part of those conversations, recently Deputy Chief Larder mentioned that they anticipate 12 openings over this next year, and unfortunately, which includes his own, so but we still got some time with him until the after the new year. So, and it takes a lot of time to recruit a police officer. You know, generally our other positions on average about 3 to 4 months, and for a police officer it's about 11 months, and that's from the time that they submit an application all the way through until they graduate the academy. And then they have additional time in which they have to work with their training field officer. So as part of that, you know, I do want to call out a handful of individuals that I'd like to really thank for all that we've done. We've spent a lot of time together over these past few months. Probably it was probably more painful for them than it was for me. But, you know, certainly the leadership of our town manager, Mary Jacobs, and Chief Riley, our HR director, Andy Votava, who is unfortunately couldn't make it tonight because one of his kids is graduating from Iron Ridge High School. So any officers working over there, feel free. He's fair game. And then obviously Weston Barkley, Christopher Knapp, and then Zach Young, who I've had a lot of negotiations with over the years. I think this is our fourth or fifth one. So in fact, I think Zach even offered to, you know, do one of these discussions out of the shooting range. And I said, no, we're going to come to agreement before you take me out there. But and then pertaining to the memorandum of understanding, there were a handful of main changes that were outlined as part of the council communication, largely related to the range of the step system and step structure, as well as the amount of steps that are offered, and there was a reduction. So, again, thank you all for that was involved, especially the leadership of Town Manager Jacobs and Chief Kara Riley. And we think this MOU reflects the town's commitment and investment into our police officers for the difficult but also extraordinary and necessary work that all of our officers do each and every day. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. I have four blue cards for this item. I'd like to invite Janae Tooney.
First time. Hi, good evening, Mr. Mayor and the council members and everybody else who's in the building. I just wanted to come today to show my support of the MOU that the assistant town manager just spoke of for a few different reasons. One, because I believe that the pay scale that we have, I mean, the benefits package that we have for our current law enforcement officers is very outdated, especially with the vast increase in the cost of living in Oro Valley. But I think that the benefits of this MOU reach far beyond personal finances, but also into the safety of the residents that you all serve. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I raised children here. I've been a resident for almost a decade. I was also a Town of Oro Valley employee in a past life. I currently, for work, spend my time 8 to 12 hours a day traveling around the country or speaking electronically to law enforcement agencies that I pick up the pieces for, those who have become broken, those who cannot recruit their numbers for a various number of reasons. But I've seen in those who can't fill those holes see a up to 56 to 60% of their crime rates in individual areas. increase, as well as obviously low morale in the actual department, and then less effective policing. And so I believe that being able to bring our, first responders up to a place in which they should be would increase, Oro Valley's police presence. And, we've got that, I don't remember what we were, but we were high in the safety record for like the safest town in a certain population, whatever it was amazing. And I would like to keep that, especially raising children in this town. And like I said, I've seen the ramifications of when a police agency doesn't have competitive wages, or when someone cannot provide the basic needs for their family on a police salary, and so they're forced to either go to another industry or go to another department. And I pray that Oro Valley Police Department never has to acquire me as a vendor to pick up the pieces or to help them to hire people and reduce crime after the fact, because we didn't take advantage of the opportunity when we had it. And so I would like to encourage and urge the mayor and council members to approve this MOU for those reasons. And I hope that you do so. Thank you.
For the record, could you state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley?
Yes, my name is Janae Toon, and I am a 10-year resident of Oro Valley.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Love your shirt.
Who said that?
Richard.
Thank you.
Richard Tracy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. I should just say ditto to what Mr. Cornelius and Janae said, but I won't, because I'm here and we'll take a couple of minutes of your time to also express my support for the memorandum and the acceptance of it. I've been an Oro Valley resident for going on 21 years. When I moved here from elsewhere in Northwest Tucson, my wife and my 15-month-old son at that time moved to a house near Tangerine and La Trolla, I'm sorry. And since then, we've had another son. They're both 21 and 18. My oldest son is a former police explorer. He spent his high school years in the Explorer program. I'm also retired after 27 years with the U.S. Marshal Service. And I consider the quality of life in this town to be the reason why I moved here from elsewhere in Northwest Tucson when I moved here in 2001. I know that's something that you hear all the time, and it's in all the, but it really is true that the quality of life here is what made my wife and I move to Oro Valley, when we did. So again, I think the retention and recruitment of qualified officers is paramount to the pay package, and a lot of that depends on it. There's a lot of leadership studies that say money is not the primary reason why people stay or leave employment, but I will say it certainly doesn't hurt. So I think we should pay our officers here in Oro Valley like our lives and safety depends on it. So I could spend a lot more than my allotted time to discuss interactions I've had with them, not only as a citizen of Oro Valley, but also as a law enforcement officer in this community that worked with them off and on over the years. And I think that in my mind and my experience, they deserve it. And in my heart, I still consider them my brothers and sisters, and I'm happy to do whatever I can to support them. Thank you.
Did you state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley?
Yeah, it's Richard Tracy, and I'm an almost 21-year resident of Oro Valley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dave Perry.
Good evening, Mayor Winfield, members of council, staff, and public. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Dave Perry. I'm president and CEO of the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce. Lisa and I are proud to call Oro Valley home since 2007. Our chamber has a $40,000 annual operating agreement with the town of Oro Valley for services rendered. My comments tonight are certainly not within those services. I want to express the business community's support for this resolution that will result in higher compensation for the men and women in our police department. I also want to express our organization's thanks to all concerned who are making this happen. We recognize that this is an expensive thing to do, that there are many demands for the people's money, and that the supply of cash is never enough. That said, along with infrastructure, public safety is at the foundation of a strong community. And I like to connect dots, and I'll connect the business dots here. If we spend more money on police, we can maintain the finest police department anywhere and remain an exceptionally safe place to live, to work, and to raise a family. When Oro Valley is safe, more people want to live and work here. When more people live and work here, more businesses want to be here, both primary and secondary employers. We heard as much just last month from Leonardo Electronics, bringing a $100 million proposal to our community that will employ more than 300 people at full build-out. They said part of the reason they're coming here is because of the community itself, what they see in our fabric, great schools, great infrastructure, public safety, which will allow them to recruit and retain employees. When an economy thrives, this government, us, the people, we have more resources to pay police and other staff. Public safety is legitimately an economic driver, and such investment is good for business. We appreciate your support for this resolution this evening. Thank you always for your time and for your service.
Christopher Knapp.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council members. Everything I'm going to say has been pretty much been said so far, but I am going to say it again. I also want to take time to thank everybody who's shown up in support of this. I am not a resident of Oro Valley, but I am the president of the Oro Valley Police Officer Association. As Mr. Connellison said, over the last few months, we've been working in conjunction with Ms. Jacobs, Mr. Connellison, Mr. Watava, to work towards a competitive compensation package that we believe will recruit, retain the highest quality officers and candidates to the Oro Valley Police Department. I'm proud to say that we were able to come to an agreeable compensation package and implementation plan. Our membership is extremely happy with the proposed plan and the back pay that Ms. Jacobs is committed to providing. We fully support the acceptance and implementation of this package. By doing this, the town of Oro Valley will be able to continue to provide the best quality services that the public has come to know and expect while preserving the reputation of being one of the safest cities. We cannot thank Ms. Jacobs, Mr. Cornelison, Mr. Fatana, Chief Riley, and Chief Lauder enough for the unwavering support they have shown in working toward this compensation package. Excuse me. I also wanted to take a moment to thank the mayor, vice mayor, and all the council members for their commitment to and the continued support to our membership over the years. Your commitment and support have been pivotal in our membership being able to fulfill the mission of the Oro Valley Police Department, the expectations of the town, and our community. You have all publicly voiced that public safety is your top priority. I shouldn't say is the top priority, is one of the top priorities, excuse me, and we feel that you have shown this to us. I wanted to thank you for your time and consideration and the acceptance of this proposal.
Thank you. I have no other blue cards for this item. Council, do you have
any questions? Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Can I have the floor?
I was just going to say if there are any council members that have questions. So, Council Member Solomon?
Yes. Well, obviously, as I think the entire community is, we're thrilled that the town is finally getting around to complete its compensation study. It's long overdue. I will point out that in the past, several times when the town was in economic difficulties, the police volunteered to suspend their step program and their raises. Also, of course, during COVID, they all continued to serve in spite of the fact in the very beginning no one knew what the health risks were, and they were reported to be very, very extreme. Unfortunately, I know we have been losing officers and we have lost recruits because of the pay scale that has effectively fallen below the competition. This luckily brings it back up to that and a little above that level so we can be competitive with the agencies that are actually hiring away our officers, and also the agencies that we're losing new recruits or transfers to. Therefore, I move to approve resolution number R22-23, approving a memorandum of understanding between public safety employees and the town of Oro Valley pursuant to Chapter 4, Section 4-1-8 of the Town Code, Public Safety Employee Relations and processes such agreement to be effective starting on June 19, 2022, and ending June 30th, 2025, and authorizing a town manager and HUD designees to assign retroactive pay to January 2nd, 2022.
Second.
Tie for second. Motion by Councilmember Solomon, tie for second by Councilmember Green, Vice Mayor Barrett. So we'll open it to questions, discussion. Questions for Mr. Cornelison, Council? Discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Thank you. I just want to thank and congratulate all of our police officers, those who are here tonight and those who weren't. I was just running by the graduation and ran into some of our officers there. So I know they're also out serving the community as well as being here in this room. I want to congratulate you on being helping us be the safest community in Arizona. And I feel like this is appropriate because in my discussions with the police unions, I understand that this will make our police officers the best paid police officers in Southern Arizona for a municipality or a jurisdiction. And I think that's where we should be and where we need to be. One of the things that I take really seriously is representing the citizens and trying to speak with the citizens, balance the needs of the citizens, and implement the things that the citizens want. Obviously, there's a balance there. But one thing that I hear consistently is that our citizens are supportive of our public safety, that they're supportive of our police department. I've had citizens randomly come up to me and say, whatever you're paying them, you should pay them more. And so I know that this is something that not just the council and the town staff supports, but that the citizens of Oro Valley support, and that that means a lot to me. And again, I just want to thank you. I don't get choked up very often, but I feel a little bit choked up because I really appreciate all that you guys do. Thank you.
Councilmember Green, did you want to? Councilmember Green?
I would like to thank Chris and Mary for your work on this. I know it wasn't easy, but you not only now have the best pay, but we have what we've always known, the best police force. So thank you all for what you do.
Any other? Councilmember Nicholson?
I just want to say make sure you thank Chris, Zach, and Wesson. They reached out to council in the last few days, and they made a big difference. And, you got a great crew there helping you guys out, and just make sure to thank them. They did a good job for you guys. Thanks.
So I certainly support this resolution. I want to express appreciation to the management team, to the union, showing respect for one another, working together, coming to an agreement and to a resolution. Our community certainly has a high regard for public safety and for the good men and women who represent Oro Valley PD. Thank you so much. You're really, in many ways, the face of our community, and you represent us so very well. Individuals speak with such high regard for you in a variety of circumstances. And unfortunately, sometimes you are thrust into people's lives that are not at their best moments. They've lost loved ones, or somebody's injured, or any number of things. And we would just appreciate so much your compassion, your desire to serve and to make life better for those that you come in contact with. So thank you for all that you do, for putting your lives on the line for us. This is a small token of our appreciation for all that you do and represent. We believe that it will help with the recruit of officers and retention of officers, There's been a significant investment in each of you, and we want to retain each of you. So we hope that you feel of our support and of our interest in you and in your families and in your well-being. So thank you. With that, I think we'll all those in favor of this motion say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item one. Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action to select the new name of the former Vistoso Golf Course property and announce the winner of the naming contest.
Okay. I have the pleasure of introducing this item. This evening, we're happy to recognize the three finalists and select a winner for the contest to name the 202-acre property formerly known as the Vistoso Golf Course and select the winning name. Tonight's decision signifies the culmination of a community-wide effort that began more than 2 years ago, resulting in the preservation of this outdoor space for generations to come. And I think I can speak for the council in expressing appreciation to the community who stepped forward, not only with their desire to preserve this property, but opened up their pocketbooks and contributed $1.8 million in a short 3-month period. And so enough can't be said for these folks that really stepped up and walked the talk, so to speak. You know, this was accomplished through a partnership with the Conservation Fund. And we're fortunate this evening to have Mike Ford with us this evening in the audience. Also, Preserve Vistoso played an important role. And in addition to that, I want to publicly recognize Town Manager Mary Jacobs, our Town Attorney Jonathan Rothschild, for helping to broker this deal. And it couldn't have been done without the community, without the Conservation Fund, Preserve Vistoso, and without our key management of the town manager and Jonathan Rothschild. So tonight's decision will begin the next chapter in this story, because this is the moment that we rebrand the property as our very own. We couldn't have done it without you, Oro Valley. And what I mean by that is that more than 2,500 names, ideas were submitted for this contest. Some people submitted the same great idea, so staff looked at submission dates to see who sent it in first. After weeding out the duplicates, if you can believe, we were left with about 1,500 unique names. I personally served on the selection committee and can attest to the thoughtfulness that went into reviewing those submissions. And admittedly had the help of my wife, and narrowing them down to just 10 for public vote. And I'll say that those that participated in that process, there were four other members of that committee, Anna Clark, who's a member of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. I believe she chairs the board. Christy Diaz-Trahan, our director of Oro Valley Parks and Recreation. Matthew Kim, a student at Basis Oro Valley and member of the Youth Advisory Council. And Gail Mateer, representing the Preserve Vistoso group. Interestingly enough, when we submitted our 10 top names, you would have thought that there would have been a lot of duplicates, but I think we had 50 unique names from that process. When it came time for the community to vote on those 10, about 500 Oro Valley residents weighed in and selected their top three choices. And so those three names that received the highest number of votes are, first, Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, which received 259 votes. Coming in second was Vistoso Preserve at Oro Valley at 227 votes, and then Oro Valley Nature Preserve at 222 votes. So thank you, Oro Valley, for your interest and participation in this contest. It's been very exciting to watch. And let's give a big hand to these three finalists. So unfortunately, our finalists couldn't join us this evening. One has escaped the heat, but we'll make sure that they receive their prizes. And as a reminder, the contest winner will receive a prize package worth more than $1,700, including a one-year premium family membership to the Oro Valley Community and Recreation Center, which includes full access to the Oro Valley Aquatic Center, free kickball team entry, four free entries to Roundup at the Ranch 5K, free Ramada rental at one of our parks, and a tote bag of Oro Valley branded merchandise. We also have gifts for the other two finalists, including the tote bag of the OV items and a summer family pass to the Aquatic Center. So, Council, now it's time for discussion and selection from these three names: Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, Vistoso Preserve at Oro Valley, and Oro Valley Nature Preserve. I listed those in the rank that they were selected by the community. So, discussion.
Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Would it be possible for us all to just sort of say the one and see if we're near agreement or
sure.
or not? Or
yeah.
Because I'm flexible, but. Okay, I think I would go with the community and go with Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve.
Other thoughts? I mean, I have to admit, I lean towards that one. I like that it includes Vistoso for some place identification. Trails is something that has certainly been important to our community and was recognized as one of the primary amenities of this 202 acres. I think everyone has an interest in, of course, the preservation and the nature, the biological diversity, really the flora and fauna of this 202 acres. I think that the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve really captures the essence of the property. Councilmember Solomon?
Yeah, I would narrow down to the two, the second and the third, simply because this has been known for so long as the Vistoso, former Vistoso golf course. The Vistoso should definitely be in, I believe, in the name, so I think the second or third are both good.
Okay. Other thoughts? Councilmember Jones Ivy?
I'm leaning towards Vistoso Preserve at Oro Valley.
Okay. Councilmember Bowen?
I lean towards Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve.
Okay. Councilmember Nicholson?
I think Oro Valley Nature Preserve rolls off the tongue better, but I agree with your points of Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve is probably better.
Mr. Mayor, can I just throw something out for council
you
consideration?
Bet, Ms. Jacobs.
Having the name Oro Valley in the name of the property helps us with branding our community. So I just throw that out for your consideration. And you do have the option of doing a little bit of mix and match, Vistoso Trails at Oro Valley. So I just throw that out for you from a marketing perspective for your consideration.
Councilmember Green.
I like what the town manager just said. I think this began with the kernel of Vistoso and the folks there working so actively, but it has transposed itself into a community-wide thing. So I think Oro Valley needs to be in the name, at least for me.
One thing I noted, Riverfront Park, is that Oro Valley, I don't know if that was included in the naming of Riverfront Park, but when you look at the sign, it does have Oro Valley on the sign, but we all call it Riverfront Park. And so, Vice Mayor Barrett?
One of my other top choices was Oro Valley Nature Preserve, but as I thought about it, I thought people like to abbreviate and shorten things. You know, no one's actually going to say all four of these words when they're referring casually to the park. So I was thinking, how would people abbreviate it? And then I thought OVNP, and then I thought that could be confused with Oro Valley Naranja Park. So I just kind of, you know, what's OVNP? So anyway, that was just a thought that I had is how is it going to be abbreviated? And so, you know, that's one of the things that led me to Vistoso Trails, was because I think if Vistoso Trails is abbreviated, it kind of rolls off the tongue. It's short enough to say in a conversation, you know, most people will probably drop the nature preserve or the at Oro Valley, even if it's part of the word. You know, when we're talking about parks, we say Naranja, Riverfront, JDK. You know, we don't say James D. Krieg Park at Oro Valley. You know, we say with our friends, let's meet at JDK. You know, so anyway, that was kind of a thought that I had, was I just liked the way that Vistoso Trails could be abbreviated a little bit better. But I'm not opposed to having Oro Valley in the formal name somewhere either.
Councilmember Bowen?
I'd like for Vistoso to be the most prominent word in the name. And the reason is there's a word missing from this name for me, and it's persistence. This thing had so many chances to go away and die, and it didn't. It's thanks to those residents up there that kept it going. And they are from Vistoso, not from Oro Valley as a whole, but they're from Vistoso. And that's why I want Vistoso to be the most prominent word in the name. Thank you.
Councilmember Green?
Couldn't be more prominent than being the first name.
Agreed with that. Other thoughts? Councilmember or Vice Mayor Barrett?
Also, I believe Vistoso means colorful. It's not just a neighborhood in Oro Valley. It's also, I think, a word that means colorful or...
Well, I have to admit, I am definitely influenced by the community's voice. I've already expressed that I lean towards Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. I'm going to make a motion. We'll see what happens. I move to recommend that the mayor and town council select the new name of the former Vistoso golf course property to be Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any more discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah, I agree. I think the trails aspect is the primary aspect. You know, we say nature preserve, but let's face it, this is an abandoned golf course. It's not a nature preserve. But the trails do exist there, and that's what is the main attraction to it.
Councilmember Green?
The trails limits the activity. We don't know what it's going to be in the future. Why should we limit it with the name?
I would say that there will be a variety of activities, but I think the primary activity at Vistoso will be the walking, hiking, bird viewing, and so forth. I've walked the trails, was there with my wife recently and some friends. One of the things that I really enjoyed about that, and I won't belabor this, is that we met friends from Sun City, actually met friends from where I live in Catalina Shadows. It just showed me how much the community has embraced this property. But I think trails will be the primary amenity of this particular property. So we have a second. We have a motion. Second. Let's take a vote. All those in favor. So this is Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
Nay.
So we have the motion passes 6-1. Good job, council. And thank you, community. And Mike, would you just... you want to stand so I can recognize you? This is Mike Ford with the Conservation Fund. He played a pivotal role in securing this property and helping to bring in those $1.8 million funds. Conservation Fund has also been managing this property until it comes into the hands of the town of Oro Valley July 1st. Mike, would you like to say anything?
Okay. Mike Ford Park was also on the list.
First of all, I want to thank you, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Council, staff, for inviting me into your community. This really was, it takes a village, and our role was a small one. It's the residents of this community, it's the vision of the council, and the support. It was a challenging, I've been doing this for a long time, as some of you know, and have done many, many things. It's probably the most challenging exercise that I've been involved in the last 24 years. And it's driving me into retirement here at the end of the year. But I want to thank the community, and I, as I listened tonight, whether you were talking about community safety or other things, it's what I told my wife the first night I went home 2 years ago when I first met you and the vice mayor and others, our friends from Preserve Vistoso, that this really is a marvelous community. I mean, I love it every time I come down here. I drive around, I look, and I see what you're doing here, and it's unique in that respect, and so I commend you, and it's been my privilege to be involved. But I really want to thank Mary and Jonathan. I would have left a long time ago when things were really tough and contentious, but we hung in, and we got it done. But it's your community that got it done. And I'll just, for the record, now that you voted, whatever you named was going to be great. I think Nature Preserve. I'm like Mary. I think it is really is an Oro Valley deal. And so I just hope your community embraces it as much as I've embraced it, and it doesn't be looked at just as an enclave for the Vistoso people. Because when it gets to fruition, it's a marvelous amenity to an already great Parks and Recreation department that you have here. And Christy and I have been working together now since we took it. So thank you. I didn't want to come here and talk tonight, but I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really wanted to thank you and this community here. So we'll be your partner holding the easement for a while, but that doesn't mean we're going to be making decisions. In fact, we're not. We have total confidence in yours. We're just here to ensure that those 600 and some odd people that contributed that money that made this possible, that their legacy, their commitment will be honored forever. So thank you very much, Mayor.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we've rebranded. We'll no longer refer to this as the former Vistoso Golf Course. That was the last time you've heard it. Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. Okay. Mr. Standish, item two.
2A, resolution number R22-22. Declaring the proposed zoning amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code related to the banner and window sign standards in Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Okay, I move to approve resolution number R22-22 declaring the proposed amendments to the Oro Valley Zoning Code related to the banner and window sign standards in Attachment 1 and filed with the town clerk a public record.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, item B.
2B, public hearing, ordinance number O22-06, amending banner signs section 28.6.B.1, window signs section 28.5.14, definitions section 28.4, and chapter 31 and other related sections.
So senior planning technician Patty Hayes will present this item.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The purpose for this item is to continue our discussion from the May 4th council meeting regarding a zoning code amendment related to banners and window signs. At that meeting, staff was directed to develop language regarding the appearance of banners and to work with the police department regarding window signs and safety. We were asked to include language about the appearance of banners that is similar to A-frame signs. We updated the banner language that currently reads, lettering shall be neat and legible, to be comparable to the A-frame sign language that reads, professional, neat, and legible. To reduce subjectivity of the words professional, neat, and legible, we proposed to add photographic examples into the code of what that looks like. We would like to add these two photos into the code, which are of a framed freestanding banner, along with a banner that is hung on the wall of a building. Adding these photos will help illustrate what we mean by professional, neat, and legible. Adding the photos was included as the condition in attachment 4 of tonight's meeting packet for this item. While we were adding photos for banners that illustrated the language found in A-frame signs, we thought we should also include photos for A-frame signs. We proposed to add these two photos into the code to also help illustrate professional, neat, and legible. Next, we were asked to work with the police department regarding the safety of window signs. After several conversations with our outstanding police staff, we added language that instructs businesses to keep a visual clear area on their main customer door between 3 feet and 7 feet, and to also keep a clear area if their cash register happens to be visible through the windows. The goal here is to provide a space where activities in and outside of the stores can be seen. That clear area is demonstrated by the red dashed box on the slide. So to summarize, this code amendment started as a way to treat new and existing businesses equally by allowing the same size banners for all and to simplify complicated window sign standards. At Council's request, additional language was added related to banner sign appearance and window sign safety. This concludes my report, and I'd like to extend a big thank you to the Police Department for working with us through this code amendment. Mr. Vella and I are here to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Okay, there is a public hearing associated with this item, so I'll open the public hearing now.
Mr. Mayor, I don't know if we already had the public hearing. I was going to ask Mr. Rothschild. Since this is a continued item.
Sure. Mr. Rothschild, do you want to?
I thought we had closed the public hearing last time, but apparently it's been posted. So the amendments changed the code, and it's been posted to allow for the public hearing, even though the last public hearing is closed. I think we have one speaker, so. I think you need to call it because it was posted that way.
Okay, Vice Mayor Barrett.
I have no objection to a public hearing. I was just trying to clarify if we had it last time, so whatever.
Okay, so I'm going to open the public hearing now. I have one blue card, Dave Perry.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, staff, and public, it's me again. I'm Dave Perry, president of the chamber. Residents since 2007 still have the operating agreement in place. We expressed our support at the previous public hearing for these zoning code amendments. Members of council raised questions regarding window signage and the visibility of transaction sites, and also some concern about aesthetics with the insertion of professional. I do want to thank Patty and Beyer, Paul, and other members of the staff for reaching back out to us and talking again about the proposed changes. Certainly we concur with these. This overall thing is an improvement from what we had in place prior to the pandemic. I do have to make a little fun about the subjectivity of professional, legible, and neat assessments of banners and temporary signage. I think the truth is no business is going to put out a sign that is unprofessional, illegible, and messy, unless, of course, it is Chick-fil-A, which has bovines painting misspelled words on signage, and it's highly effective advertising, I might add. So, yes, those terms are subjective, but we'll live with them. Signs are important to businesses. Businesses want to put their best face forward. We're not going to see bad signage in Oro Valley. These codes are more clear. They're more efficient. They're more flexible for our businesses with what they do with signage. We're grateful for your support this evening. Thank you again for your time and service.
I have no other blue cards. I'm going to close the public hearing for this item and open it to questions from council.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Just wanted to thank our planning staff and our police department for getting together on this after the last council meeting and coming up with a good solution.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Patty Beyer, who's going to be responsible for kind of policing the businesses and making sure that they're appropriate.
Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivey, thank you for that question. Our zoning code is primarily enforced by our code enforcement officer who works with the Community Economic Development Department.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Patty. I notice a common theme throughout is simplify. Now, we've gone and worked with the police, and we've made some modifications based upon police input. Can you describe for us, though, the overall simplification that you think is taking place at this point as you ask us to consider this?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, thank you. Overall, the code is proposed to be more simpler to understand for all, for businesses and for code enforcement folks. So, for example, the window signs. We're simply saying 30% of your windows can be covered in signs, but be cognizant of the safety aspect of that clear area that we talked about. And that's about it. Our current code, the way it reads, we have to tell businesses, well, you can have a sign ban, and it's 12 inches tall, and it can be midway, and it's the length of the thing, and it can only say these certain things. And then you can have a little display area a certain size. Then you can have a name and the hours of operation, and it can only be this size. And then there's some illumination. It goes on and on. It's complicated. And the banners were also that way. So right now, we tell a business, well, are you new? Are you existing? Well, if you're new, you can have this really big banner, but you're only going to need to be able to use it for a short period of time. After that, you're just an existing business, and now you have a smaller banner allowance. That's a little confusing, especially for new businesses who are starting out. It's one of the million things they have to think about. So now we are simply just saying one banner size for all.
No, Patty, I actually think that's a very good off-the-cuff explanation for it. And I just wanted to caution that in the attempt to simplify, you know, sometimes we can have gotchas there. And I would consider the fact that the police consider the possibility that key elements of the inside could be covered, even a 30% scenario, is something that, you know, we should always be aware of. And I just always believe that the people in the past, and I'll repeat this again, They had a rationale for what they did, and I will always be asking staff, why do you think we do it the way that we do it? But thank you for your good off-the-cuff explanation. I think I can be in favor of this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Councilmember Green?
I want to thank you for your work, and I would suggest that as we pass this, we add to it that we get a report from you all in the next quarter as to how it's working and if there are any glitches to it. Please.
Thank you, Councilmember Green.
Ms. Hayes, I have a question. With the 60 square feet, is a business required to, can they have a smaller banner, or does it have to be 60 square feet?
Mayor Winfield, the 60 square feet is the maximum. They can have smaller if they desire.
Okay, thanks. Other, Vice Mayor Barrett?
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Okay. I move to approve ordinance number 022-06, attachment 2, amending zoning standards for banner signs, window signs, definitions, and other sign-related sections subject to the condition in attachment 4, based on finding it is in compliance with the general plan.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Vice Mayor Barrett, seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 6-0. Let it be noted that Councilmember Green stepped out. We're going to take a 10-minute break before going forward. We'll resume about 5 after the hour. Okay, we're going to resume our regular session. Mr. Standish, item 3 of the regular agenda.
Update on the video recording of board commission meetings and options for potential digital involvement in neighborhood meetings.
Vice Mayor Barrett, Mayor Winfield requested this agenda item. Turn the floor over to Vice Mayor Barrett.
Since I was just asking for an update, I'm happy to turn it over to whichever of the staff is
so
ready
that would
to provide
be,
an update.
Paul Melcher, or CED Director Paul Melcher, Town Clerk Mike Standish are available to
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I'll speak on mainly probably behalf of the Board and Commission piece, and then I'll probably turn over the other part to Mr. Melcher. So just kind of giving a brief overview regarding the recording of Board and Commission meetings. So after Council gave that direction here a few months ago, staff worked with the vendor to get that contract in place for the managed services. And then after that was in place, then of course we started working with our other boards and commissions, letting them know of, you know, the changes. So since approximately, it was early, I would say about by February-ish, we did have everything in place to start recording the board and commission meetings that did occur here in the town council chambers.
So the board and commission meetings in the town council chambers are currently being recorded, right? Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, thanks.
And then Mr. Melcher, did you want to speak to the neighborhood meetings portion?
Yes, thank you, Mayor, members of the council. As staff, we had gone back and started looking at providing options to the town council regarding neighborhood meetings, what that looked like in terms of providing Zoom access. And one of the things that we had developed were two options. But before I present those two options to you, I wanted to also let you know that just late this afternoon, the Planning and Zoning Administrator informed me that there was a standard operating procedure that was approved back in 2014 for neighborhood meetings, the conduct of those meetings. And with that late notice, without having been able to go back and compare what our recommendations are to you versus what's in that SOP, I'd like to request that the town council allow us to go back through the town manager's office, just pull the team back together, vet these options that we're presenting against that procedure to make sure that it's in compliance with the procedure, and then bring back recommendations to the council again.
Any further?
Thanks. That sounds like a good option. Thank you.
Okay. So this was this item was for an update only, so no action. Mr. Standish, we'll go to item 4 of the regular agenda.
Discussion and possible action requiring all cost estimates for the proposed Naranja Park improvements and their annual maintenance be presented to and reviewed by council prior to any groundbreaking for those improvements.
So Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green requested this agenda item. I'll turn the floor over to Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, thank you. The town of Oro Valley financial and budgetary policies, which actually was approved, revision was approved July 7, 2021, states policy 1.0, capital improvements. All projects, both ongoing and proposed, shall be prioritized based on an analysis of current needs and resource availability. For every proposed capital project, all operation, maintenance, and replacement costs shall be fully costed. That is not the case that we have on Naranja Park in the bonds, the capital improvement projects. It's out of compliance with this policy. We have not received the costs of the improvements, let alone the operation and maintenance expenses that will go along with that. I think it's irresponsible for the town to go along with a $15 million plus project spending taxpayer funds in violation of our own policy, breaking ground and making plans prior to we have any of these costs. And that's why I've brought it up this evening.
And are you directing that to any particular person, Councilmember Solomon? Directing that to any particular person? Do you have a question? You're just raising?
Well, no. that's. I thought that was fairly self-explanatory, that we're in violation of our own policy, and that I wanted to know this evening if we have those expenses, and if they'll be presented to and reviewed by council prior to the groundbreaking for those improvements.
Ms. Jacobs?
Certainly, excuse me, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Solomon, when the master plan was developed for the Parks and Recreation process, the consultant did include some cost, some annual operating costs that are noted in the report. The direction in terms of what we're proceeding with was something that was duly voted by the town council. And the town council can make exceptions to their policies. The policies were voted in by the council. They have subsequently provided that direction. The bonds have been issued, and we're happy to follow any subsequent direction on the part of council, and we'll do so upon any vote or direction of this body.
Well, thank you. I think it's pretty irresponsible for the council to ignore its own policy, and this is a blatant violation of its policy. The list of improvements was not the park's master plan. It was a random list of improvements that were presented by some council members at a meeting, and the majority of those were low priority items based on the statistically valid survey. In fact, two of them were items number 31 and 32 out of the statistically valid survey, which, by the way, was corrupted after it was taken by four different occasions. I could go into the details and name the dates and times. And effectively, the master plan had no relationship to what the statistically valid survey found and what our residents wanted. So what I'm going to do in that case is I move that we require all cost estimates for the proposed Nronhart Park improvements and their annual maintenance expenses be presented to and reviewed by council prior to any groundbreaking for those improvements.
I second that.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Solomon, seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Okay, thank you. First of all, as the town manager noted, we do have ongoing cost estimates that were part of our master plan process that were provided by our consultants. It is likely that those cost estimates should be updated. I think with the groundbreaking, there are a couple of important points. One is with the bond, we have to spend the money by a certain time, 2 or 3 years. And so if we don't get started, we won't be able to complete the projects within the timeline of that bond. And in addition to that, this groundbreaking is not each individual item. And so I think our engineer has already explained to us as part of the construction process how we're using a sorry, Mr. Kiesler, can you help me with the language, the manager at risk program to and help help further explain that a little bit?
Yes, Vice Mayor, Council, Mayor. It's a construction manager at risk process.
Okay, can you just give us a brief summary for the purpose of tonight's meeting what that means?
Certainly. So what the construction manager at risk is a team consortium. It's the designer, the owner, and the contractor. We all work as a team on the design. We all work as a team on the bidding. We all work as a team on signing the contract. And then through the construction, again, we're a cohesive team. So, for instance, when it's bid, the contractor will create a price under a design bid build, which is a regular kind of contract I think we're all accustomed to. You have to pick the lowest bid. The beauty of the construction manager at risk is the contractor gives you a bid. Doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the cost is going to be. Then we'll value engineer. We all work together. We look at their construction methods. We look at means and methods. There's a whole lot of stuff that we can get into with the construction manager at risk that you just can't get into with the more conventional types of contracting that allows us to lower that price and to really know what we're getting into as we're doing each piece.
So what is it about the current environment that makes you feel like this construction manager at risk process is the right way to go for this project and others?
Vice Mayor, merely as I mentioned this, that we actually get to discuss what the means and methods are. How are they going to build this? And let's just say the price comes in higher than we're expecting. Well, it also gives us the ability to maybe throttle back the project a little bit if we need to. It's a dynamic process is really what it is, and that's what the advantage is. And you do that for your larger projects.
Okay. So if the groundbreaking goes forward and the grading is complete, will you be able to bring us cost estimates and maintenance estimates for individual portions of the project, such as the fields, the splash pad, the pump track or bike track? Will you be able to bring us those cost estimates and ongoing maintenance estimates as we move forward with this process?
Well, there's a little bit of a difficulty with that, and that is that it's a negotiating process. So again, after we do the design, we can come and talk to you about what's in the design. I would hesitate wanting to talk about what we expect the price to be, because what if we're higher than what the contractor was going to do? Well, we've just set that bar for the contract. Oh, yeah, that's the price. No, we don't want to do that. What we want to do is have the contractor bid it in earnest. We work as a process. If we were to stop, let's say we work it as a process, we get the bid down to what we think is the fair market value for that piece. If we have to bring it back to council and have it approved each and every time, that's just going to extend everything. You know, between agendizing and getting it on the council when we're ready to go. That's a consideration you'll need to make if that's the way you truly want to do this.
Okay. Could you provide a summary of that idea to the council in a council report for us?
We certainly can. Yes.
That'd be good. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
So, Mr. Kiesler, effectively you just confirmed what I said, that is we don't have any pricing. Certainly maintenance and ongoing costs have nothing to do with the grading and the prep work. Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
Thank you. So basically, let's go to the bottom line here. We can make up all the excuses and fancy names we'd like. The bottom line is this council's about to embark on spending over $15 million without any knowledge of the cost of construction or the maintenance or the ongoing costs or the life cycles in violation of our own policy. Of course, we can come up with excuses. Oh, we're so far along, we can't stop it now. That's a great excuse. We're so far along. Why didn't we do this a year ago when we were talking about these projects when they were just named off in a council meeting? So I stand by my basic fact that we're in violation. It's irresponsible. It's not good stewards of taxpayers' money. We're just going ahead to build some things that are on lowest priority on the list.
Ms. Diaz-Trahan, could you just briefly remind us of the process that we went through in updating our Parks and Recreation master plan with PROS Consulting? That process included life cycle, operating costs. It also included estimates for the various site plans that were developed as part of that, and also how we arrived at those site plans for each of the parks, but maybe specifically for Naranja Park. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. So through the master plan process, we did concept plans for each park. And then within those concept plans, we identified a cost estimate for the either replacement or new, and then the consultant also provided some general cost estimates for operations and maintenance. Specifically to Naranja Park, there was the a cost estimate included, but that was related to a phase one implementation, which does not align with what the council has approved. The phase one was two sport fields, a splash pad, and some just general site amenities. So that is just, it's a fraction of what council approved.
Can you elaborate a bit on the Naranja Park site plan that includes the multi-use fields, the splash pad, the pickleball courts, basketball courts? How are those amenities arrived at?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. All of those amenities were arrived at through the community engagement, so through the statistically valid survey, through the online surveys, through talking to different user groups. And what we did is we looked at the system in total. And so in total, there was the desire to add pickleball courts. In total, there was a desire to add more sport fields, et cetera. And then from that, we went back and identified where does it make the most sense to put these specific amenities. As it relates to the skate park and pump track, while that didn't raise to the peak, it is a an amenity that it does not exist in our community. And there was a voice within the surveys that said, yes, this is an amenity that we would like to have in our community. So when we put together the site plans, it made the most sense to add that amenity at Naranja Park.
And what involvement did council have in the development of those site plans?
Mr. Mayor, Council, throughout the year and a half process, our consultant met with PRAB every month. We had our touch base with Council, I believe, in May of 2020, and that was a critical point, and that was presenting all of the statistically valid survey data, the inventory data, and that was a key piece in order to do the second half, and that was really the planning. We came back to council, I want to say maybe three, perhaps four more times. You're taxing my memory here, Mayor. But we did bring back information to council multiple times, and then ultimately in May of last year, the final document was presented.
Thank you. Other questions?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes. Parks and Recs is one of the most difficult areas to determine how to spend your money. There's always choices. There's wants. There's needs. Every group is a special interest group. There's the baseball players, softball players, football players, soccer players, pickleball players, tennis players, on and on and on. So it's always very difficult. So what was the solution to that? Well, the proposed solution that was the town would hire a consultant to do a statistically valid survey to determine those needs, as opposed to every special interest group showing up and raising their hands and the one with the largest number getting what they wanted regardless of the need. That consultant in their introduction stated this was the only scientific and defensible method to understand community needs. It had multilingual capabilities administered by mail. It was completely controlled. It was done along demographics and geographical lines, and the town received an enormous, more than expected response from that, and the confidence level was 95% or greater. That should have pretty much been near the end of the story, and they generated the community wants or needs based upon the statistically valid survey, which the town told us we needed to do and which we spent thousands of dollars on. Item number 31 out of 32 was a dirt bike pump track. 32 was a skateboard bicycle park. Item 21 was a splash pad. Those are the items that the council's included in this bond issue. Now, I take exception with saying that we're funding the master, the Parks and Rec master plan. That's not the case. That was not the motion that was made. That was not the motion that was passed. There was a hand-selected list of items, those three being among them, which all ranked low on the priority list. Now, here's something else that happened with our master parks plan. How did it come about? One would think you'd have taken the statistically valid survey and from that look at what does the community want, what do we have, what are we missing, so let's design it. That's not what happened. We went through an entire process that invalidated at each step the statistically valid survey. In January of 2020, there was a consultant team conducted a series of town hall stakeholders and focus group meetings where randomly, or I should say not randomly, people came in and said what they wanted to have. Once again, back to the original problem of everybody wants their own little special interest. That was the whole reason for this statistically valid survey. In February and March, the consultant team and Town of Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Advisory Board conducted a series of intercept surveys to gather input from residents regarding the importance of parks and recreation facilities and amenities. All right, these were conducted utilizing a display board dot exercise methodology on several different dates. Hardly a statistically valid survey, but that's how it was done. Next, a part of the park of the community input process, they had a project website where people could go and just say, this is what we want in the park. And then finally, there was an online survey that everyone could participate in. Now, I don't understand why we start off paying for a statistically valid survey, and it's sold to us, and it's sold to us by members of this council, that this is the only way we'll know what our park and rec needs are. And then once we receive it, it seems like we didn't like the results, because it seemed like we went through an awful lot of work to change the results from the statistically valid survey and form a plan around it, reverting back to just the input of special interest. We had four people request a pump bike track. Half of those people weren't even residents of the town, yet we're getting a pump bike track. We have a splash pad. A splash pad that's less than half on our priority list that uses potable water, which everyone seems to be so concerned about. And now we were told at the last meeting that's going to be the first amenity built. Why? Where's this pressing need for a splash pad that was in 50% down on a priority list when we're ignoring some of the top priorities?
Councilmember Solomon, the motion that you have on the floor is to have staff bring you cost estimates and annual maintenance costs going forward. You're moving toward...
Presented and reviewed by council prior to any groundbreaking for those improvements. Yeah. Now, I thought once the whole discussion was opened up on the Master Parks and Rec Plan, that opened the area. But that's fine with me if you'd like to call the question.
Well, I'm not calling the question. Somebody else has to do that. But I just need to stay on the agendized item. And it seems like we're sort of traveling to reconsideration areas of what the priorities are. The council has voted on the plan. The motion on the floor is do we review on a regular basis the cost estimates for what that capital cost is and what those annual fees are, annual cost.
Well, that's not exactly it. I agree with you in as far as the scope, but it specifically says require all cost estimates for the proposed Narnhart Park improvements and their annual maintenance costs be presented to and reviewed by council prior to any groundbreaking for those improvements.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes,
I do want to alert the council that we have a couple of contracts that the town then has entered into regarding this project. The first is the design, and we have that underway, and we had a presentation to you recently. The second is we did enter this week into the grading portion of the contract that is now a signed contract, and our contractor will be mobilizing next week. And so I just, it's my duty to advise council that anything that could prevent the contractor from moving forward could result in financial penalties to the town.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
I'm willing to amend the motion to exclude the grading component of the contract. I'm sorry, the design and grading component that we are already under contract for.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, a couple things. First, I'd like to take exception to the idea that we don't have any idea how much these things will cost in life cycle improvements, because that was specifically something that the Parks and Rec Advisory Board asked for from the consultant and received, and I reviewed those numbers in advance, and it was well within our capacity to be able to add to our parks and recreation. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is the groundbreaking and the part that we have construction on coming up is for the grading. So we can be able to receive some of that additional information for these amenities if we need to take a look at, you know, what the maintenance cost is going to be. I think it's fine to ask staff for, you know, a council report to update those numbers from a year or two ago on what it will cost to maintain those fields, for example. I think the fields are the thing that was actually going to go in first. And we have a pretty good idea what it costs to maintain fields because we already have those same fields. So, you know, as we move forward to where the grading's finished and we're actually able to put in the fields, then I think that it makes sense for us to get an update as to what the life cycle assessment or yearly maintenance requirements would be for those fields. And so with that said, I will vote against the motion, and I'd like to call the question.
Second.
Second to what?
To call the question.
Calling the question is a motion, which requires a second.
It does require a second and a vote of council. All those in favor of calling the question, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Question's been called.
Mr. Mayor, please restate the motion.
Councilmember Solomon,
restate the motion. The motion is, I move the requiring all cost estimates for the proposed Naranja Park improvements and their annual maintenance expenses be presented to and reviewed by council prior to any groundbreaking for those improvements, with the amendment that excludes the design and grading work.
And it was seconded by Councilmember Green. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion fails 5-1. So we'll go to item 5 of the regular agenda, Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action regarding the extension of the town's reclaimed water pipeline and prioritization of this project.
Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green requested this agenda item. I'll turn the floor over to Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, thank you. First, I do want to mention that this, or very similar agenda item, was proposed by Councilmember Bowen and seconded. And after not seeing it show up on the agenda, I decided to put it on a specific date because of its importance. This matter requires a reasonable amount of study and work from our water department, and they've expressed they're more than happy to do that. They've started the work, but that since it is a rather reasonable amount of workload, that they would have preferred that council actually gave direction to the water utility staff regarding this item. So I'll move that council direct staff to study the possibility of extending our reclaimed water line and report back at the next council meeting for discussion of possible action on this item.
There's no second, so the motion fails. This particular topic was proposed by Councilmember Bowen, seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. It's my understanding that there has been a discussion with the town manager, with Mr. Abrams. This is agendized for June 1st.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, there was. I just thought this was a critically important project, particularly considering today's water situation, that the council would like to step up and state publicly that this is a thing they wanted to pursue, that was more than likely a probability, so we could extend our reclaimed water to our parks that are currently using potable water. And since it didn't seem to appear after Councilmember Bowen's request, I thought it was prudent to put it on this agenda, and apparently the rest of the council doesn't seem to agree that this is an important or priority item.
The item is agendized for the June 1st council meeting. Councilmember Bowen, seconded by Councilmember Nicholson, it's on the agenda. It's on the agenda management report. It's agendized for June 1st. Okay. Are there future agenda items? Councilmember Bowen?
Mr. Mayor, I had tried to make a comment. There was a reason why I did not assign a date to this item, because I think the analysis is of sufficient complexity. I did not want to bind the town staff into completing by a certain date. But I agree with Councilmember Solomon that this is of critical importance. But also, when we talk about it, I want our water director to be extremely comfortable with the cost that he's projecting for us. And that's the reason why I didn't assign it a specific date. It was in no way because I thought it was not a critically important item, but rather simply it requires a good deal of study before we begin talking about it as a council. Thank you.
Future agenda items?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
I'd like two future agenda items. The first, discussion and possible action regarding the repayment of the 2015 community center loan from the general fund.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Solomon, seconded by Councilmember Bowen.
Second future agenda item, discussion and possible action regarding the need, schedule, and cost of a new police station for the next council meeting.
I'd second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any other future agenda items? Okay, hearing none, I move to adjourn the regular session.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes 7-0. We'll open the study session. So, Mr. Standish, if you'll read the first item of the study session.
Review and discussion of an updated concept for the Oro Valley Marketplace.
Carrie Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan will present this item.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Carrie Sylvan with Lazarus and Sylvan, thank you for taking the time this evening. I want to, you know most of the people who are here with me, but just in case they need to come up and answer any questions, David Little and Rob Longacre with WLB Group and Tatiana Bressler with Eglin Bressler Architects. Unfortunately, Jim Horvath was already planned to be out of town. Toby was supposed to be here. He is not feeling well, so he's watching, but I do not have anyone from Town West here this evening. Hopefully we can cover for them. Again, I want to thank you for having us this evening. The main purpose of this study session is really to show you a little bit of an update. We weren't ready pursuant to your February motion to asked to come back for a complete presentation because there is one issue that I like to call the chicken and the egg here, which is we have some more work to do with staff on the project, and we want to continue doing that work. We have a clarification that we need, a discussion that we need related to just heights of the two hotels that you'll see are left as we've redesigned pursuant to your February motion. Help if I go the right way. That's our team who I already introduced. a couple of things. Most of you know, and you saw it in your packets, the motion that was made, and I'm focused on the motion, which was granting our request for a continuance, having us notify you when we're ready to come back officially, which we're not quite ready to do yet, and that all of the uses needed to meet the existing PAD heights and setbacks. So we have done that on this plan with the apartments that you'll see in the Section A. Those are now the garden apartments. There are apartments down on Oracle as well. There are now only two hotels. The hotels are, one of them is in the park area. The other is up along Tangerine. This plan shows you some of the totals. Again, we're still working through a lot of the details with staff, but this kind of gives you an idea of where we were headed. Everything on here meets heights and setbacks. Again, I'm going to focus us in on the hotels in just a minute. When we brought this issue of the height of hotels to the town manager, staff, and to the mayor, we were asked to kind of take a look at maybe putting the hotel, that second hotel over on Oracle. We did that. That's our plan B. This is doable. It's not our preferred option. The hotel, we would prefer that second hotel to be at Tangerine across from the hospital, and there are some other reasons as well that I'll talk about in just a minute. But we can make it work. The main reason that I'm here is really to ask for some guidance on the related to that height of the hotel. Again, everything on here is, other than those two hotels, will meet the 39-foot height limitation that allows 10 feet for architecture, and will meet all of the setbacks as we continue through the design. Ever since the very beginning of this project, starting in 2019, we have always requested that the hotels be 49 feet with the 10 feet of architecture. So it's a difference of only 10 feet from what's permitted in the PAD. That's what permits four stories on the hotels. We currently have the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott, and let me back up. In large part, that 49 feet plus the 10 feet was in order to attract particularly Marriott and Hilton, which we've mentioned before, and their limited service hotels, which are they are at the four stories, 49 feet, with the ability in some areas to do the 10 feet for architecture. We currently have under contract the Spring Hill Suites Marriott. That's one of the brands that we were looking for. They are under contract and are interested for the Tangerine site. That's one of the reasons we'd like to keep it at Tangerine if we can. That hotel brand is a proven brand. They bring with it a customer base as well, which is all really important to the success of the hotels on the site. The second hotel we're finishing, we're at the end stages of a contract with the Hilton for a Hampton Suites. And again, that's in the entertainment area. That is also a four-story hotel at the 49 feet with the 10 feet for architecture. The consequence of lowering the height by that 10 feet is that we can't build these hotels. Those hotels go away, and we don't have enough land on any of these sites to be able to successfully bring forward to Oro Valley a good branded hotel on the site. So we really do need that 49 feet height, again, plus the 10 feet for architecture, which is 10 feet lower 10 feet higher than what's permitted in the PAD. We talked a lot in February, and I'm not going to belabor the issue of the elevations of this site. These are all areas that range from between 10 and 12 feet below grade of the roads to 80 feet as you get towards the intersection, and a significant distance and a minimum of 15 feet to the nearest neighbors. So we do think that's justified for these two uses. Again, everything else, and they will meet setbacks. So we can do the four stories and still meet the setbacks on these sites. We need guidance. That's really why we're here on this particular issue. And again, we're focused in on the motion. And we do, like I said before, we do have some work to do with staff. We were at a point where we need to know if we can put hotels on the site. And this is a critical piece. And it doesn't completely match your motion. So we needed some clarification.
So, Council, questions for Ms. Sylvan? Vice Mayor Barrett? Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
You were speaking about the Plan B and having moved one of the hotels to, I believe, Oracle. Okay, so that, but both of them would still require the 49 plus 10 feet. Is that correct? Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, yes, that is correct.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Okay. In looking at the Plan A, when you say that it meets setback requirements, does it meet the setback requirements for the Tangerine Road Scenic Corridor, where it's four times as far back from the road as it is high?
Mayor and Councilmember Barrett, it meets the PAD and the Tangerine Road, right? Scenic Corridor. I'm just looking for nods. I'm getting nods. Yes. I apologize for looking at staff. So we have sat with staff to understand how that is implemented. We have implemented it. Again, we haven't turned this in officially to staff to review because, again, there's still some more work we need to do on it, but we understand that's the guidance, and we will make sure that it meets that.
Okay. Personally, I have no objection to the hotel that's near the entertainment district being higher. It's relatively low down and far away from scenic corridors and mountain views, and I think it would have low impact in that regard. I prefer option B due to the fact that if you'll switch to option B, due to the fact that the hotel would be further away from the road potentially and not in between a scenic corridor and the mountain views. So that's kind of my thought, but it's a little bit hard to tell without, you know, going on site and seeing the balloons and stuff, how to what degree that would be blocked. But that protecting that scenic corridor is something that is highlighted regularly in our general plan and I think is important to the community. And so that's why I feel like we could go to the 49 feet plus 10 feet for architectural, or I can only speak for myself, plus 10 feet for architectural features at the entertainment district. And then, I do like option B, but I'm open to hearing what the council thinks as well.
Other comments, questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you for updating the proposal. Got a question. One of the benefits of the previous proposal and having the taller apartment buildings, particularly up at Oracle, was you had room to park underneath. Has the parking analysis been updated? Because this looks to me like it's lower slung, but there won't be any parking underneath the buildings. Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, again, we're going to have a lot more detail when we come forward with the parking, but yes, there's no parking that with a 39 feet. We can't do parking within the building. That's going to be all units. So it's the typical garden style apartments that you see with the parking around it. So that, yes.
Thank you. My next question is for the town manager. Is it anticipated there'll be an economic development agreement to go along with this new proposal as was proposed initially for the February proposal?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Bowen, that is something that we'll need to continue our discussions with you in executive session.
So the answer of yes or no will only be revealed in executive session?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, staff has requested the item to go on executive session, and it has been postponed until this project has moved forward, so we do fully intend to discuss this matter with you in executive session.
So we're not saying no?
I'm afraid I can't really reveal anything additional in the public. It's something that we'd have to discuss behind closed doors.
Well, for me, it's the public's money that goes into the economic development agreement, so the more of it we can discuss in public, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Those are my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. So I also want to express appreciation that you've come back with these options. And the motion was made with respect and concern for scenic views and so forth. So I'm certainly open to the 49 feet in elevation for the hotels and 10 feet for architectural. I similarly favor Plan B, but I'm open to Plan A with a little bit more information about the visual impact of the location of the hotel and option A. But I think what you've presented is in line with the direction the council gave. And in addition to that, I think it's also would receive support from our community. So I've talked with residents. I think they clearly support and recognize that something needs to happen with the marketplace different than what's happened in the past. Based on what I'm seeing, I think that this really represents what the majority of our residents with their expectations. And just a clarification, the hotel and the entertainment district, the first floor of that would be what?
Mayor, members of the council, the first floor of that is intended to be have a retail component to it so that it interacts with the space that we're creating there.
Okay, thank you. Other questions?
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon and then Councilmember Nicholson.
Can you clarify option A and option B? Is option A the one with the hotel on Tangerine, or is that B?
Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, option A, and by the way, we just named them for this study session. So option A is the one that's showing you the hotel on Tangerine, as well as the hotel in the entertainment district. Option B was a first attempt at seeing if we could make the hotel shift from Tangerine to Oracle.
So my understanding is option A is the preferred option with the hotel on Tangerine because of its proximity to the Oro Valley Hospital and the medical officers, that is the one that your potential tenant is in favor of or looking for. So we saw from the previous presentation that will have almost zero impact on the view corridor, if any, particularly now when we're looking at this as opposed to the taller apartments that were originally proposed there. The artist renderings were extremely clear that that has no impact on the view corridor. And by the way, the view corridor would not be in that direction anyway. The view corridor, that would effectively, anyway, it would have more of an impact, I think, on the view corridor and the other locations. So I would definitely like to see option A, since that's the preferred location. We want this to succeed. We do not want to continue the failure of the marketplace because of restrictions that are put on it from the start. So let's give it the best chance of success. It's an ideal location for a hotel. The people who are in the hotel business know their business. They know that's the location they need. And I don't see that location having any detrimental impact on a view corridor in that location.
Councilmember Nicholson?
I'm in support of option B. I still feel the view corridor is very important. I am in support of allowing the hotels to be taller. I think it benefits you personally to get the income from it, but the town also benefits from the added rooms for the hotels. So, and as far as the hotels being close to the hospital, obviously it's easier for them to market, and when, you know, you're leaving the hospital, you see the hotel right across the street, but I don't think the drive would be too far from option A to option B. I just think the view corridor was so important to half our community, at least. I would be in support of option B, but I don't think I could support option A.
Sylvan, in your narrative that you provided along with these site plans, I mean, you spoke about the viability of this proposal, right? That mm-hmm. this was, and I presume that was both of these proposals. So is that correct? I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
Mayor, members of the council, both are viable for sure. I mean, I think that the thought process, and I think Mr. Solomon summarized it, is we have a contract for Tangerine, so we would need to go back and have some discussions about moving it over to Oracle. We provided both for a reason. So we know what we prefer, but we definitely need the 49 feet if we're going to make hotels work on this site at all. So we want to make sure we're getting the feedback we need.
Well, I think there's agreement on the 49 feet. There's the issue of the setback from Tangerine and the protection of that scenic mm-hmm. corridor. Vice Mayor Barrett?
Okay, I just want to add a couple more items as you go back to look at it. First of all, option B also puts the hotel right by the entrance of the state park, which I think could also be beneficial. People who may want to enjoy the state park but may want to stay at a hotel instead of a tent may like that option or area. I want to add that my support for the higher building is based on it being a hotel. So it would be tied to that use. I guess that's kind of understood, but I wanted to explicitly state that. Just because the hotel will generate, people coming, it will generate bed taxes, it will generate tourism for Oro Valley. So, there's a very specific use there in the hotel. And then I do want to comment. I know we were focused last time on the with the balloon tours and things on the apartments, but I did look at the two different hotels, and there's probably nothing that can be done about this, but I did feel that the hotel in the entertainment district blocks the view from the what's currently the Wash. And so anyway, there's probably nothing that can really be done about that. I don't think it causes a problem with the views from the road, but I hope that any kind of design would include areas that would have a nice view for people to sit or to eat or to be, right? Like at a restaurant patio with a view or...
Got it. So, Mayor, Councilmember Barrett, what you're talking about are people who are on the ground interacting with the center, making sure the hotel is situated, that it doesn't block the views from... some of those spaces.
Right. So that, okay. Yeah. So that those spaces could be a successful, draw with that beautiful outdoor view like we have at Steam Pump Ranch or, in the marketplace now we have that. So there may not be a lot that can be done about that, but if there is, I'll just throw it out there that I think we could have greater success with a view, at least in part of that area. I know it wouldn't be 100% of it. And then the other thought I had is that as I've been talking to citizens. A lot of people feel strongly about trying to have the center be oriented as much as possible towards walking. And so I understand we're in the constraints of a site that was previously designed. So when they say, well, let's turn it into this shopping center that's here or this shopping center that's there, you know, well, we have a partially existing shopping center and constraints that are upon it based on that. But I do think that there's support for pedestrian connectivity and walkability, because that's something that I hear regularly from residents. And I know that's something you took a look at, but when you go back and pencil in the design, if you could just keep that in mind. And thank you. I really appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey and then Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. I also want to thank you for coming back to us with some options. I, too, lean towards Plan B. I did take an opportunity to drive out Tangerine as well as Oracle and kind of visualize the positions of the hotels. The thing that I did like was the fact that as you're driving, I think this is east on Tangerine Road, you did have the ability to enjoy that scenic road. The other thing that really kind of made me lean towards it is it's not going to impose upon the Red Lobster. We need as many of our existing businesses to remain with us. And so I can work with Plan B.
Councilmember Bowen, then Councilmember Solomon, then Councilmember Green.
Yes, my next question is for the planning manager. Regarding a situation such as this, where an applicant proposal is brought to council, but it's been through planning and zoning, it's been through the neighborhood meeting process, and there's a significant change in the applicant's proposal at the time of the council meeting. We have a continuation from February. Can you describe for us how far back in the process something such as this change would need to go in terms of planning and zoning or neighborhood meetings or what have you?
Mayor, council members, council member Bowen is correct. At some point, if there's such significant change relative to what a commission is seeing to council, it needs to go back. So some of the criteria that we use to judge that by, are there significant changes to traffic circulation? Are they actually proposing more intensity, et cetera, et cetera? Or something that is such a big shift relative to what the neighbor saw? Everything that I'm seeing tonight, as far as these two options, it's going in the direction of less intensity, not more. So it's less height overall, and less number of units, less traffic. The jigsaw pieces are not shifting that dramatically. These are existing set pieces areas for development. So we don't have new areas of development involved. So what you see before you in serving the council, the town manager as the planning and zoning administrator, the determination with this would be absolutely suitable to continue on to town council. This would not need to go back to the Planning and Zoning Commission because it's moving in the right direction in terms of less intensity. Hope that helps.
Yes, thank you. And a brief comment. All seven of us council members view the public, and we may view them differently. Most of the objections that I heard from the public at neighborhood meetings and in the council meeting on February 16th aren't really addressed by this new proposal. So I take exception to the mayor's statement that this is responsive to the public. It's certainly a movement in the right direction. But I recommend we go back to the neighborhood meetings and planning and zoning to verify if that statement actually is true, that this is responsive to the public. Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes. Well, actually, at the council meeting public hearing, the vast majority of people were in favor of this, and a large number against it were not even residents of Oro Valley. So I'll just make that comment. Obviously, town councils one of our functions is policy on land use and land use decisions. I don't think council should be involved in designing a major private project with local investors from the dais, coming and saying, well, I think you should reconfigure this. I don't think you should get rid of that. I think that's micromanaging. I don't believe, I know myself, and I don't believe anyone else on council has any commercial development experience or have ever come in and put in $336 million investment into our community, all of which will be at risk. These people are experts in their areas. I don't think it is wise for the town to try to design it from the dais, particularly, as I said, we're not the experts. They are. They're the ones with the proven track record. So I just caution council on this, going in that direction, trying to design somebody else's project on a minute detail, which really doesn't get into council purview. Once again, I still think we should go with the option that the professional support that these people support. They are members of our community. They are putting everything on the line to revitalize this ghost town of a mall that we have. And I think we need to trust their judgment, particularly on some of these details as to what the best location of a hotel is. I heard people talking about driving. Maybe the reason for the hotel in Tangerine is, particularly if you're visiting the medical center or the hospital, you want to walk across the street, not drive. You can't walk to it from the other location. It's too far. So these people know there's a reason why they do this. This isn't a random plan that they just threw together in 15 minutes sitting up on a dais. This has been months and months and months and months in planning. So those are my comments on it.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing this back to us. I guess I wish I went on a fool's mission and went out there and walked around and talked to the people who have skin in the game, who own businesses or operate businesses out there. And I will tell you, I did not find a single person, not one, who was opposed to this idea, and I found very few who were concerned about the heights. They seemed to really be fixated on that. When I went out there with the staff, they put balloons up at different heights, and there wasn't a single balloon that would block anything other than the foothill vision on the other side of Oracle. And so, you know, I'm very much in favor of this, moving this along. I think We're creating stumbling blocks for you. It's our job, I guess. But I think it's time to kind of move this thing along.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I know with the market right now, too, interest rates are going up. Like, are you guys on any type of time frame, timeline that makes a difference with loans or anything like that?
Mayor, members of the council, yes, yes, and yes. And part of the reason we needed to come before you, we really appreciate staff and the town manager and the mayor making this evening available to us, even with my clients not being able to be here, because we were sort of at a stopping point, and we now really need to go back and put even more pencil to paper and get where we need to be, because, yeah, we're watching all of that, and we want to get there. Those are the economics behind the deal, right? And we want to get moving.
Yeah, so is there, I mean, you don't have to tell us, but I mean, just let us know if there is a timeline that you need so we can make sure to, it makes a big difference when it's $350 million. So.
Yeah.
I want to let you know I'm cognizant of it, so like, yeah, just let us know.
If Jim were standing here, he'd say, we don't want to put too much more pen to paper. We want to be back here and get this done in 2 weeks. That's probably not going to happen. But we will, I think we do have a commitment. We've talked with staff about doing this quickly. WLB Group has been working really, really hard. I know I'm always the one standing up here. They're doing all the hard work. I'm presenting it. So we're going to try and get back to you as quickly as possible with this direction. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Yes, Ms. Sullivan, can you please...
Oh,
You said that Plan B is a viable option for you. Is that right?
Mayor and Councilmember Jones-Ivey, yes, it's a viable. I don't know if it's going to look exactly like this, but Plan B being that the hotel is preferred on Oracle Road relative to the height, we're going to start putting pen to paper.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'd like to see you come back with it as soon as you're able to. So, staff, Carrie, that's my preference. Thanks.
So, Ms. Sylvan, thank you for presenting these two viable proposals.
Thank you.
And I think you've got some sense of direction from the council. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. So no action is taken. This item was for discussion only. The study session is adjourned. Good night, everyone.